right. So that's James 3. You can start there if you want. I'll do a tiny bit of review here. So we're talking about the pure voice, a voice free from motives, meaning when we listen to God, it's not tainted. And if we learn to develop that and hear from God in an untainted way, we'll be a lot more blessed and able to clarify, hey, this is the voice of the Lord speaking. This is the voice of our conscience, of our born-again spirits, of our heart. It's easier to discern when we know how to use the process of elimination and eliminate some of the other voices. And so we'll talk about the voice of worldliness or desiring other things, and that pulling us off from God. Amen. So we're talking about that today specifically. So if you want to write down three chapters, I'll be going to 3:4. That's 12, right? It'll be Proverbs 4, Mark 4, and James 4 mostly. So if you're taking notes and you'd like to write that down, that'll be Proverbs 4, Mark 4, and James 4. But kind of the premise scripture for this series, I guess I've been doing, this is going to be part 4, and I believe the last one, but is James 3, mostly 13 through 18. So it says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." So we're talking about the wisdom that is from above is pure. And that's the wisdom that we all want in our hearts. It's the pure wisdom of God. It's the knowledge of God coming into our hearts. And it's a live stream from heaven. And we all want that. But there is an impure wisdom that comes. There's earthly, sensual, and demonic. You could break those up and teach on those too. But we're talking specifically about different motives. Because when I hear the word pure, I often think about motive. And that taints, you know, whether it's fear, guilt. You see a lot of Christians, they live under a lot of guilt. I have some relatives that live under guilt, and it's a religion. And they just live under it. And they're so beaten and old looking. You know, they just look tired. They don't have a freshness to them. And it's you know, it's just sad to see. And they're always saying things like, "Oh well, you know, if the Lord wants to, I know He can do this." And there's no, it's a weakness. And I was raised under some touches of that in the church, and among some relatives. But we don't need to live there. And purifying our motives and eliminating the non-voice of God, so to speak, will help us all just feel a lot better and serve the Lord better. So one of these motives is desiring other things. Let's go to... Actually, we'll just go on down in James 4. Some more. Look at this. "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure?" See that? Desires for pleasure that war in your members. "You lust and you do not have." He's telling them how to avoid strife. "You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. And then when you do ask, you do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures." Notice that word pleasures there, on your pleasures. Then he says, "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world..." And that's what we'll be talking about, that motive, the desire to be friends with the world can be a pull on us. And it comes in different forms. But the friendship with the world is enmity with God. Therefore, whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. So we're not to desire to be friends of the world. So let's look at, we'll come back to that chapter. We're going to be in Proverbs 4, Mark 4, and James 4. So let's look at Proverbs 4 next. You know, being drawn off by how things look and the appeal of other things, of what we don't have, is as old as Eve and Adam. Because remember, it says that when Eve saw the apple, it was pleasing to the eyes. And she knew that it was a fruit that would make one wise to know good and evil. So one of the first things Satan used to draw off a person was distraction. Distraction by looks, distraction by taste, but it was a distraction for Eve. And I'm sure Adam had thought about it before, so he didn't hesitate very much to take a bite himself. And that's kind of what the goal for worldliness is. And Satan himself, you know, we talked about pride being one of the motives. So Satan himself was drawn off by pride and drawn off from God's will for him by pride. But then one of the first things he used is this attraction to something else other than God's best and that desire for something else. It's another reason why the tithe is so powerful, because something we need in this world, and it kind of is a, you know, money and or bartering in the old days, that money and the need for provision is strong. It's a strong desire. And so when we give a tenth to the Lord, it constantly commits and recommits us to Him to say, you're our sustenance, you're our provider. So it makes sense that the tithe would come along with that. It really helps us prioritize these things. But Satan would like to draw us off. And the world itself is just they're appealing things. You see a new flashy car go by, or other things, whatever men are tempted by, or women are tempted by, they can draw us off. I mean, it's interesting that one of the first temptations is to Eve, and she's drawn off. But we usually think of guys going after the fast women, fast cars, alcohol. We often think of that as a male thing. But one of the first things one of the first temptations was Eve getting drawn to the beauty of the apple. And that, I don't know what would be the modern day equivalent of that. Maybe it's just food. I mean, our culture is consumed with food, and it can be a big distraction. It's almost ice cream. Especially in this weather. Yeah, that's a good one. All right, so let's look at Proverbs 4. I'm just going to focus on it. We read this so much in this church. Thank God. It's a wonderful, rich verse. Proverbs 4, 22 or 20 through 27. But let's look at 27. Do not turn to the right or the left. Remove your foot from evil. Or look at verse 26. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. We're kind of going backwards here. Let's look at verse 25, the countdown. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. There is something to keeping focused in this life. There's just something scriptural about keeping focused. There's all through the Bible you could see where it says, set your eyes on this, set your mind on this. If we go up to verse 21, he says, do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. And he says, guard your heart with all diligence. He says, keep your heart, in verse 23, with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Or we could say, we receive the pure voice of God and direction and guidance from the Lord. We receive peace and security, that born-again heart, that new creation reality. Like was it 2 Corinthians 5:17? You know, you're a new creation. Old things are passed away. We receive that. So we have this ability to tap into a very pure and Adam and Eve relationship. The same relationship they had to God. Same relationship that Jesus had with the Father, we can have with the Father. So, but we're to guard our heart and we're to keep it focused on that. And distractions for worldliness or other things on this life, they'll pull us away from that. And they'll keep us from really satisfying that urge we have as born-again believers, to satisfy God's plan for our life, to fulfill the Great Commission, to witness to friends, to be an influence at work and in our communities. That's a yearning that comes from within that God's given us. So let's look at Mark 4. Mark 4. Da, da, da. There are so many things in this parable of the sower. And let's look in verse 7 and then verse 19. Because we're talking about distractions here. And or pursuit of worldliness, you could say. So Mark 4, verse 7 says, and some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. Then let's look at his explanation of that. The thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. And he's talking about the seed being the Word, and about the Word producing fruit in our lives. And he's talking about what chokes it. So then in verse 19, he's going to interpret that parable. And he says in verse 19 of Mark 4, and the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things, entering in, choke the word, and it becomes fruitful. It becomes unfruitful, sorry. It becomes unfruitful. The cares, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things, enter in and choke the word. We could look at Luke 8 real quick, just to see how he words it, because this parable is also in Luke 8. I'll just read that real quick too. Luke 8:14, he says, "The ones that fell among thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life." That's Luke 8. We're mainly being in groups of four here, in chapters of four, Proverbs 4, Mark 4, and James 4. So we veered off here, Luke 8, to clarify. Because Luke says, riches and pleasures of life, choked with cares. It's a bad picture to be choked, isn't it? I don't like that. I'm like, you know, you ever just fall out of a tree and land on your back or something? I did. We climbed trees a lot when I was a kid. Or you fall off of something and land on your back and knock the wind out of you and gasp for air. And I've never been choked physically around the neck, but just that. I felt like it when my mom would put on ties before church. That was more because it tickled than anything else. I couldn't stand that. But that's Mark 4, 7 and 19. Luke 8:14. So the pleasures choke out the word. We get drawn off and we're distracted. Let's look at verse 4 again. Let's go back to James 4. So we've read Proverbs 4. It says, do not turn. Let's not turn away. Let's go back to James 4. Hebrews, James. It's over there by Peter and James, or Hebrews and all that. All right. James 4:4. See, it says, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. You know what? There's verse 3 also. You ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. You know, something about this, spending it on your pleasures, in verse 3, too, I wanted to touch on. You ask that you may spend it on your pleasures. That verse kind of highlights two things for me. One, we're distracted. If this describes us and we're spending it on our pleasures, we have to be focused on something else that's not God. And number two, what that implies is we're failing to please the Lord because it's your pleasures. We spend it on our pleasures. And then when you get into verse 4, that friendship with the world is enmity with God. Whoever wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. And I like this verse because it clarifies what scriptural jealousy is. Do you think that the scripture says in vain, the spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously? I heard a talk show host, a real famous one, you'd know the person's name, this person said, someone told that person when they were young and in the church that God's a jealous God. Now what the talk show host interpreted was that God's envious of the things we have, which is it's not envy. Scriptural jealousy means he wants sole place in your heart and to be above everything else. It's more similar to a spouse. When we say a jealous spouse, they don't envy what their spouse has. A jealous spouse means, I'm a jealous spouse. We should all be jealous spouses if we're married. We should be a jealous spouse in the scriptural definition. What that means is you prize the love of your spouse above all else. You prize the love of your spouse and you do not want that spouse to have competing desires other than your own, do you? That is not fun. You know, that's why pornography is not fun when the man's involved with it and the wife. That is not fun because it's not honoring that jealousy that a man's birthed with and that reflects the image of God. That's an image of God, this kind of jealousy. And it's awesome when we see it pictured as the Lord. He wants our undivided attention and devotion. He doesn't want us peeling off into other things. And this is a precious thing. If we grasp hold of this and we hunger for Him, we can really step up a notch spiritually and really get to know Him real well. He desires so much to know us, but he is jealous. And this is a good jealousy. It's not coupled with anger necessarily. It's more the strength of his desire toward us to be purely seeking after him and to be heartily seeking after him. It's a big deal. I like it. And I like that my wife is jealous. I like that. It's a good thing when it's scriptural jealousy. We're talking about a good jealousy here. I like that she knows that when I'm at work, I'm not making eyes with other girls at work or flirting. It's very important to me as a husband that my wife not be a flirt. That's in the sense of giving attention to other men to make them feel special. That's a place reserved for your spouse. And it's awesome. And it's a wonderful thing, that type of jealousy. It's a good thing. Anyway, that's a little side junk on marriage, I guess. But man, this jealousy of God is a good thing. He wants our following. He wants our desires to be for him. This is a righteous thing. It's a good thing. So, how's it make him feel in verse 4 when we want friendship with the world? How's it make God, if you can describe, and I know the word feeling sounds kind of shallow to something as powerful as the Lord, but bear with me. There's lots of feelings described in there. Therefore, who wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. And he uses a term that's reserved for unfaithfulness out of marriage in verse 4. He uses adulterer and adulteresses. See, he wants that commitment. He doesn't want that sluffy kind of attitude about, oh, Lord, you're okay, but there's so many things going on right now in my life. It's not a reason. He wants our devotion. There's such a draw. Draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. That's also in James. So it's an awesome thing. In fact, that's verse 8 of chapter 4. So that's what we're talking about. And at verse 3, let's talk about the word pleasures. Because we saw that in Mark 4 and Luke 8. How the pleasures of life draw us off the cares, the deceitfulness of riches, the desires for other things. Only you can determine what that is that's drawing you off. But all of us have a draw towards something. Every one of us, if we're honest, could list things that draw us off from fellowship with the Father. And it's so important to have this fellowship for a Christian, to have daily devotional time where you just commit, you talk with him, you go on walks and you commune with him and have time to let him speak to you. Whether it's the morning or you're a night owl and you stay up late after your kids or your spouse is in bed and then you commune with the Lord. This is such an important thing to have this hunger and not allow distractions to come. Because it's really easy in our culture to turn on the TV, to throw a movie in. Movies are cheap now. And they're on the internet. It's just cheap. And most of them are horrible and you feel dirty after you watch them. Even the clean ones, sometimes they just yuck your soul. There's no life to them. And then I go back and we watch some family movies that are produced today, some of the modern action and superhero movies, and they're fun with the kids and stuff. But I never feel like if the Lord's drawing me into a special time of prayer or something and I watch one of those, I'm not getting much out of it. And I know you guys have been there too, where there's something you need to spend time praying about, or we've all been there, and you make a decision for something more shallow. It's just a bad taste in your mouth. Why? Because he yearns jealously towards us. And we felt that we didn't do that. So we repent. There's restoration. It's awesome. But we don't have to go there. And we can make better and better choices as we near the Lord's coming. So that's what this message is about, really. So let's look at Ephesians 5. Let's see what we should be doing with our pleasures, with our desires and our time. And let's not let the worldliness draw us off. Someone sarcastically said of me once, and I really appreciated it because he knew my heart. He said, Josh is all about keeping up with the Joneses. And I'm so glad that... And he was laughing. And he was laughing pretty hard. And I was laughing pretty good because that's the antithesis of my life. I don't care what my neighbors have and what they're doing as far as... pulling me off, but that's just one small area in my life. There are plenty of other things that can pull me off of God's perfect plan, and we all have our things, but one of them I've neglected. Anything you starve will die, And Elon was listening to a teaching recently, and it talks about anything you starve will die. If there's something that's got a bigger place than that yearning that God has for you and that you have for the Lord, then you can starve it. Whether it's food or entertainment, you can starve it and it will die. You will replace it with a... There was a video game I had to delete off our iPad. And it took me up a notch spiritually, just that one decision to delete one video game. And I kind of talked with the kids because they enjoyed it. My wife enjoyed watching us enjoy it. But it was like, you know what? There's a certain level I would commit to that game. Like, I know I got to get some good sleep for work. I wake up 3 a.m. for work. But you know that, hey, one more game. I was willing to drag out my sleep for that. But you think I gave God the same kind of attention before bed? Do you think that I said, you know, I was just one more chapter? No, but I'm getting there now. But one of the steps was to delete that, because you starve something, it'll die. And look at Ephesians 5 here. Ephesians 5, 8. It says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth." Doesn't that sound like James 3? That pure, noble, that peaceable voice of God. I love this language. God is so clean and good. And it's just wonderful to serve a Creator like that. And so he says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. Did I skip over verse 10? That was the one I was there for. Proving what is acceptable to the Lord. Another translation says, find out what pleases the Lord. I really like that one. What if our pursuits were, what pleases the Lord? Man, I want to do this. What pleases God in this area of my life? Man, I want to pursue that. I want to pursue it wholeheartedly. Till that burning and that yearning for that presence of God and His Spirit just really consume us. I mean, we ought to be aflame with the love and with the passion of the Lord. Remember the first time you're born again. Remember the first time someone laid hands on you or you were filled with the Spirit. And that first time those tongues came out and that the Spirit filled you. Remember that and cherish that. It's just like with my wife. And when we meet a new couple, we've probably asked a lot of you this the first time we met you. My wife loves to ask a couple, when did you first meet? And man, just to watch a couple's eyes and their body language and their expressions change as they talk about falling in love. It's fun. And my wife and I rehearse that. She constantly rehearses the day we met and where we were and the first time she touched my arm. And there's no hair on it. Her dad was a more hairy man. She's like, what did he shave? It kind of grossed her out. She was like, she always remembers that. But then I turned around. She says, my blue eyes just struck her. And she's, you know, that's the way she'll describe it. I'm not being flowery. She really like, she was the, you know, you see in a movie that someone swoons. She actually swooned the first time I hugged her. And I've never seen that. That's just the kind of lady she is. She's very, it was real powerful for her. And we both knew that God had called us together, so it was all made more powerful. But not too many women swoon nowadays. And it wasn't because I was so great. It's just something about the way she's made. Anyway, she's real special. You guys know that. So, next subject. Yeah, let's get back to the subject here. Verse 11, have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness. Understand what the will of the Lord is. I'm going to just kind of wrap up with this. When we're to get the pure voice of God, we ought to constantly examine our motives. So I'm going to, as we're pursuing the Lord, a lot of things in life that are dead to us, they're deadening. It's like having a limb with a bandage over it or with a rope. Like an addict, you know, when they get their veins to show up, or the doctor when they do that blood pressure test, your veins bulge out. It's like clamping something, and it's going to dry up and die. A lot of our pursuits, they're dead works, and they're shallow and they're stupid. You know, they're not helping our soul. They're not helping our growth with the Lord. And God's going to show us what those are and help us pursue Him, all of us. I really believe that. And in these last days, it's even more important to be attuned to this fresh, good, pure voice, just like the first time we were born again, if you're not already. Some of you may have all the fire you want and you need to settle down some. You need a wet blanket to come along, but I'm not there yet. And then he says, and so one of the things we can ask ourselves is why am I doing this? You know, I like to ask a kid that when they're talking about doing something. We ought to ask ourselves why. In anything, especially where you're mimicking the world, ask, why am I doing this? Because often it's to gain attention. You'll find if you examine your motives closely, a lot of times we do things for attention. And like, I had friends in high school. They all got these lizard skin cowboy boots. And man, they looked neat. They looked really cool. They got my attention. And all these guys I knew were from Texas. And so when I lived in Oklahoma, I said, I'm going to get some leather lizard skin boots. They got these neat kind of stripe patterns over them. I thought, wow, that's good. So I went to Drysdale's, the local Western store in Tulsa. It was a big, huge chain, actually. And I got this pair of these lizard skin boots. And I wore them to church on a Wednesday night because down there they wear them like dress shoes. And I thought, man, this is not me. I do not like these heels. This does not feel good on my knees. I feel like a girl walking around in heels, you know, girls that wear heels. And I thought, this does not feel good. Other men, they can wear them. It's like wearing tennis shoes for them. They grew up in them. They've got a natural gait that supports that type of heel. They've developed that, I think, because they were tortured as children. No, I'm teasing. I have no idea. But men can do it. You know, there are some men that wear them, and they always wear them like Sid used to wear them, you know. And man, it didn't work for me. And I rushed those back to the store so fast because it wasn't me. It was just a distraction from who I was. It just wasn't me. It wasn't right fit. But there's so many things, some as innocuous, as harmless as that, and others way more grave and serious that get us thinking, I want to try that. I want to do that. But ask yourself why. I had no reason for doing it other than I thought it would be cool. And I went through a cowboy hat stage. That lasted about one day. Because I said, it was practical on a farm I worked on. You're out there for 12 hours in the sun. That's why that hat was developed. And it's perfect for that. It covers your shoulders, covers your head, covers your nose. You can see a lot further because it provides shade over your eyes. It's the most practical thing in the world. But none of the other cowboys wore them. The literal cowboys, men that worked with cattle in Virginia, don't wear cowboy hats. They wear ball caps. And I didn't like that because it didn't guard my ears from the sun. It didn't do me any good. But anyway, we do all these things for different motives, and we get drawn off, like my stories there. And then, so ask yourself, why am I doing this? Like, especially if you're about to get some unusual piercings or markings, you know, things like that. Ask yourself why. Be real honest with yourself. And I'm not dissing. I'm not going to tell you that you're violating your conscience. But I can tell you, if you're not asking yourself why, you're missing a great opportunity to discover who you are and who God really sees you as. You know? Because you can get real extreme, too, and say, my wife shouldn't have earrings. My wife shouldn't have makeup. You know, that's not a scriptural view to go all overboard with it. Because one person wants two earrings, one person wants one. I do know that it's probably really impractical to have multiple piercings connected with chains all over your face so that you can't even brush your teeth without clinking. And, you know, parting the chains like curtains.
Put a ring through your nose.
You know, and you know, anyway, it's a side note, but let's ask ourselves why. And ask yourself, what is the origin of this work, deed, or speech? That'll show you your motives. What is the origin? My wife asks that to my kids and me. She said, what was the origin of that behavior? Like some of the grotesque things that people mutilate their bodies with. What's the origin of that? Can you picture Jesus doing that? What's the origin of that? Would the Lord be involved with it? Does it make you feel clean? Does it make you feel good? Or does it make you feel cool and rebellious? And you know, those are not motives from the Lord, people. Those are not motives from the Lord. To feel cool and in, those are not motives from the Lord to draw attention to yourself. That's not from the God. That's not from the God of heaven. That's from the God of this world. That's not right. You know, that desire for coolness. I'm not talking about wearing fashionable clothes that are discreet and modest. I'm talking about some of the other things out there that people can do. I mean, there are people that pierce their back from the top to the bottom. You ever watch that? Remember that show PM Magazine or Ripley's Believe It or Not? You could see some grotesque things about what other cultures are doing out there. And there are Americans that hang themselves on crosses by their piercings. And they think they're relating to Jesus. I think that's sick. You know?
Right.
And they hang themselves up. They're not proving anything. The Lord suffered, you know, maybe in their darkened conscience. But we have to think a little bit, and we have to ask motives. We have to ask ourselves motives. Some of them, maybe their hearts, I can't judge their conscience. But I can say, you know, it's not glorifying God. I can't judge the individual's conscience and say that they are individually violating their conscience. You understand? I'm not doing that. I'm not saying if you had a tattoo, you're violating your conscience. I'm saying we should examine ourselves. We should examine ourselves. And to go about flippantly following trends and things that the world does doesn't make us stand out at all. It makes us look like putzes. And it makes us look like one of the cattle with our head down following the fence instead of leading the pack toward righteousness and godliness. You know, and too much of us, we're down with our heads down following the pack. And the world wants us to stand out. I'm real blessed. Some of you have had, Bernard's a good example of this. When he's at work, he's open and honest about things he believes about very controversial subjects. But his co-workers hear the righteousness of God. They see his excellence at work, and it stands out. And I'm really blessed when he tells those stories. And I was really blessed. I was with a friend of mine and a co-worker. And the friend was another Christian. And the friend's much younger than I am. And the friend, underneath my boss, we were both having a chat with my boss. And I thought, I was trying to introduce healing and Jesus and kind of share the gospel and how good God is. But this friend was way more bold than I was. And he was just being matter-of-fact like a child. And it really convinced me and convicted me that, you know what? I've been putzing around with my words at work. I have not been myself. I've not worn those horns of a bull and stood out. You know, I've not let those words just stand out. And we all need to think, what's an area where we're just kind of, we got our heads down, we're following the cow in front of us, and we've just got our heads down. And we're called sheep in the Bible. But we don't need to be ignorant. And sheep aren't cattle. Cattle, I don't know what sheep do, but cattle really follow the fence. In fact, we had one cow, and her ear on this cattle farm I worked on, Angus, for beef, and they tagged her ear with 64. And she was unique. And every now and then a cow's born that doesn't have its head down. And it, for whatever reason, it prances a little bit more. And they look almost like a horse. And they toss their head and they carry. And we had an interstate that runs through that part of Virginia called 64. And this cow had the ability to jump fences. The other cows, it was a female, it was a heifer. And she would jump fences. So we called her I-64 because she took off. And she took off like an interstate. And we'd constantly have to call other farmers and go find her. But it was unique that she held her head up. Because most cattle, they stay down and they're very easy to cow. In fact, a cow, if you watch rodeos and stuff, a lot of times they'll grab its head, they'll rope its head. Everything has to do with the head. It's very head related. Like if you're taking a small calf, you can take a 500-pound calf, but if you twist your body into it and use your hip, if you get his head down, the whole body just whoom, and you think, how can I master this 500-pound creature? But its head is very determinant. And this cow is the same way. Most of the cattle just follow the fence. But we ought to be, as Christians, we ought to have our heads up. You know, it says, look up. There are a lot of scriptures that say, look up. There are scriptures that say, set your minds on the things above. And if we've got our heads up, we're going to live at a level and we're going to cross boundaries that the world's only imagined are possible. Everybody, you guys know in this room, the great inventions, they come out of the heart. They don't. When you start to read into the personal lives of people like George Washington Carver that developed so much from just a peanut, you start to find out this man had some roots in God. Or even Einstein, to hear him talk about creation or something. You know, a lot of these great minds, to hear them talk about the way the earth was created, they have something, a sense that comes from inside of the deepness and the largeness of what God's made, whether they acknowledge God or not. There's a largeness of that, and these great inventions come out of the heart. And we're to be achieving, and there's just no limits. So, but to get there, it would really help if we narrow the voices we're hearing and the draws we're hearing, and we give in to that jealous God that's jealous of our... Think of him as a spouse that wants your attention and wants your affection and wants your devotion and your time. And the more you focus on him, the more the draws, the things that would pull us off, they'll just fade away. They become dumb. Like that game I shared earlier for those of you that came in a little bit later, that I had deleted a game off my iPad. And that game, it has no draw on me now. I have no desire to load that back onto my iPad. It was just one little innocent game. It's fun. It was a fun game, but I have no desire to go back there because I'm limiting my time to certain things. And one of those things is communion with the Father, spending more time with Him and His Word, praying in the Spirit, developing my spirit and my soul. Anyway, So let's go through a few more questions that we might not have covered. Does it make you relate to people? In other words, are you doing it to be liked? Are you doing it? A lot of times I'll say something at work and I immediately have to apologize for it. Because it's, even though I get laughs for it, it crossed the line. Because I knew I was saying it to get a laugh. And it's tacky, or someone can take it the wrong way and it'll cause offense. But I said it for a laugh. And it might embarrass someone in a meeting that I wasn't really being conscious of. So we need to tone back these desires to be liked too. That's one of those worldly pulls. It's one of those things that pulls us off that pure voice of God. So be careful, because the desire to be liked can be a strong pull. So let's be careful about that. So if you're doing what you're doing or saying what you're saying only to be liked. And that's, for some of us, that's a very strong part of our personality, is to be liked and accepted, especially the more garrulous ones, the ones of you that favor a crowd and that are good in large groups. You know, we've got to be careful, because it'll just weaken. It'll just weaken our influence if we only do things through that motive. And are you trying to prove something? Are things we're doing or acting, are we trying to prove something? Back to that example of a tattoo. And again, I'm saying I'm not criticizing that action for a certain believer's heart, because only God knows your heart and your motives. But I'm saying I've heard people say this when they're getting a tattoo. Like, my husband's a wuss, and I got this tattoo because I'm, you know, because I can do it. And they always get it. They brag about it at work. They're always bragging about the most painful places they could get their tattoos. They're trying to prove something. That's not something we should pursue. And I don't mean the tattoo part. I mean the pursuit of something that causes pain for the sake of bragging. I saw guys do that in high school. They'd burn they would make paper clips into the shape of the hall. It was a boarding school, and they would make paper clips into the shape of the first letter of their hall. So, like, I lived on Turner Hall, so guys were burning T's into their arm. And I thought, I got nothing to prove to you, boys. I didn't want any part of that. I was like, you guys can go burn yourselves. Have fun with it. And sometimes, you know, sometimes, like, in military, they do stuff for camaraderie and fellowship and a sign, just like wearing a ring. But I just give me the ring. I like my skin the way it was intended to be. But like I said, you know, I'm not judging you. But question your own motives. How do I feel among parents while doing this to you younger? There are plenty of young people in here. How do I feel among my parents when I'm doing this, engaged in this, with this person? That's a really good question to ask yourself as a young person. How do I feel? Is it clean? My wife used to say when her family, excuse me, her family had, her mom particularly, had a certain man in mind for her. It wasn't me. She hadn't met me yet. She hadn't swooned yet. But this guy tried to take her hand in public, and it just didn't sit right with her. And he's a nice guy. He's a godly man. Since then, we've met them even in the States, because he's Swedish and his wife's Swedish. He actually married a girl named Elin. And they have four. Do they have four kids? They have four kids, and they have a set of twins. And they're a beautiful family. But it just wasn't meant for them. He was a godly man, and so, you know, your parents pick out people that they like for you. But she said, when I would walk down the street with him, I wouldn't dare take his hand. It just didn't feel right. A lot of times you can go by those unctions. She said, it just didn't feel right. I didn't want to be known as his lady or as associated with him as a couple. And I mean, her mom tried really hard. There's some fun stories there. But she can tell them to you during fellowship. but anyway, so it's something. But when she met me, we were hugging and holding hands and all kinds of stuff right out in public and right among her family. And she felt good about it and said, this is the guy God has for me. And I agreed that she was the woman God had for me. So it worked out. But a lot of times the parents are a good indicator. You might think, well, my mom or dad doesn't like this person or whatever or like this behavior. But that's, your parents have been places you haven't. It's just generally, it's good to just think about it. It's one indicator that things are clean and headed in the right direction. When you feel clean around your parents. And that's my last question is, does it feel clean? Does it just feel clean for you? You know, does it feel clean? Just think about all that implies. Do you feel clean? You know, crimes are often done in the dark. There's even a scripture about that. There's a hiddenness. There's a darkness. It's done late at night. a lot of crimes, a lot of things like that, a lot of immorality. You know, it happens in the dark with the lights turned low, you know. And there's certain things that, you know, between a man and woman that are married that are just great. But there's a lot of that that's more tempting at night when people are tired, their defenses are low, they're, it's dark. You know, it's just, it's not clean and open and light. So ask yourself, does it make your heart feel clean, open, and light? Like my wife often asks the kids, would you do that in front of pastors? Would you say that in front of pastors? Would you behave that way around pastors? And, you know, and that sometimes she can say the father, but it's a little different with your pastor, too, because then, you know, there's just something different there. There's something different when you're thinking of moral issues a lot. So think about cleanness, and I'll just end with that. It's just good. And we'll...